And welcome back to another exciting episode of Extra Feature. Jenna's my favorite guest because she comes back fairly regularly. Who will be back again this year because I still owe him a season 4 interview. I have not forgotten. Robert Pagan is here. Thrillberry Murders. How many movies you made now? 50? 23?
God. 7 features in 4 years.
Wow. This man does not stop people.
Yeah, and the 6th feature comes out in November.
I know. You told me I have to get ready, so I'm ready.
Yeah.
So I want everybody to know I watched this on Tubi, so please support this man and watch it on Tubi. Because I found it very easy to watch on Tubi. So let's start at my favorite topic to start off, location. You have many again. You now take me to a school. Am I in your house again? I never really know where you're filming half the time.
So you are in my old house in Los Baños and bits of my new house in Vegas.
You're in Vegas now.
I am. I moved here 2 years ago, and now I'm officially, I announced it a couple, I'm here. I'm in Hollywood 2.0.
Awesome. That's great. So when you're doing it, okay, so you started off at the school, and then you filmed in your old house, and then went to your new house. Do you bring your cast to your new house then? Like you say, okay, we're filming here now?
So Thrillberry Murders is an interesting movie, and location, when we talk about location, it goes in. It was a movie that was made over 4 years.
Okay.
And so the Las Vegas location was only the first 13 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah. Everything else was filmed in California.
So how does that feel to make a movie over that much amount of time? I mean, I know you're a director. I know you know what you're doing. But that's a monumental lot of time again.
So the reason why it was so long is because Thrillberry Murders wasn't originally Thrillberry Murders. Uh-huh. It was a film that was created for an event in a film festival event called the Merced Queer Film Festival. And it was just a movie that was going to be played there. And it was a 3-hour long frickin' movie. Then I turned it into a small web series. And I just didn't like either of them. Mainly because I didn't edit them and I did, you know, I had a different editor. They just didn't understand the story. And I wanted something that was more like John Waters camp, you know, ridiculous B movie horror, knowing it's a B movie. Like I wanted that. And the editors just didn't understand that. And so basically about 7 months ago, I decided screw everything and I repurposed it and edited it and decided that I was going to add new scenes. So I added an entire new 13-minute intro and that was filmed here. So realistically, it was a it's one of those things that for me, it's a better understanding of process. And I'm in a time as a filmmaker now where I want to produce what I want to produce and I want to put out things that I'm happy with. And I feel like some of the stuff, especially like seasons 1 and 2 of Last Gasp, those were very contrived by other people. So now what is on Tubi, what's here, TV picked up, what's on Prime, they're all re-edited. They're all movies now. Nothing's a series. We have Last Gasp 1 is its own movie. Last Gasp season 1 is 2 movies. 1 and 2 is a movie. Season 3 is its own movie. Season 4 is a movie. Yeah. They're all movies now. So like, and I went back, re-edited everything, repurposed it. Now they're all picked up by networks because they're truly what I wanted versus what a film school kid wanted.
Yeah, I want to back this up. Sorry, that's a lot of info there for me. So what I watched, I don't know, 2 years ago, maybe you were on the show, maybe 3. It's been a while.
Yeah.
So that no longer exists is what you just told me.
Nope.
And you re-edited that into 2 movies.
Yeah.
Oh, my
three.
God.
Three movies. Because you watched 2 seasons. So that's 3 movies, yeah.
Okay. How is the director able, is he able, easier to parcel that out to Netflix, Amazon, Tubi?
Yes. For me, it was, especially for Last Gasp, because Last Gasp really has that limited series feel.
Yes.
Like, you know, and as a web series, the short segments, they were easy to digest on YouTube. But for the audience of a Netflix or a Tubi, they want that long drama.
Right.
And so repurposing them as limited series not only made them more what I wanted, the vision, the storytelling was better. But yeah, they're totally more repurposable. Like Trilberry Murders was a 9-episode web series that I turned into under what, maybe a little over 2-hour movie, maybe a little under 2-hour movie.
201?
Yeah, something like that.
I can't remember now. I watched it.
So it went from 4 hours to 2 hours, and I added things. It's a totally different feel. People can watch the series on YouTube.
So do you find people are discovering you that didn't discover you before then with all this new stuff? That must make you happy.
Yeah, I mean, it makes me happy, but I also think it's like, it's funny because it always backs up what I tell other people, which is just be honest with yourself and do your own thing. Don't try to be contrived. And, you know, we had this mission of, you know, Last Gasp going to Hear TV or to Logo or to like one of these queer networks. And it didn't happen until I ignored everything anyone who's ever been in film told me to do.
Excellent. Well, that's good. Let's go back to your movie now. That was a good side topic. At the beginning of the movie, who wrote the note?
Oh, my husband in 5 minutes.
Good for him. Lighting on the stairs. You go from a blue to a purple. You do change the colors. Why is that?
Because I want the audience to feel uncomfortable. The purple also shows the idea of the queerness. We go from that dark blue into about, oh, we're about to go into a jack-off scene. Enjoy this.
Okay, well, I was going to get there next. Can I use the term queer? Is that going to offend you in anywhere?
No, I love that word. Okay. I love it.
I would like to say, people, you are a queer filmmaker, and all your films, you make sure I know. If I didn't know watching your film, I do know by the time I'm done. So I just want to state it that way. Now, do you do that on purpose so people know what they're getting into with you? Because this one I found, I was like, okay, if I wasn't sure before, I definitely know now.
Yeah, I do. I do it on purpose because I think it's honesty. People want to see honesty. You know, I hate watching filmmakers who make stuff that's just fake and isn't honest to themselves. Like, the best horror films have honesty with inside themselves. Like, the reason why Halloween is such a freaking great movie is because that's what they wanted to do. They went out with the idea of, this is the vision. We're going to make one of the best slasher movies for no money as possible. And they did it.
Okay. I want to know your feedback on that sexual scene. Because for me, being, I'll be honest, a straight guy, I was like, wow, he's going for it.
Which one? The hand? The first one
I'm talking about. I'm like, is this
first one?
Talk about making me feel uncomfortable.
So, I will tell you, the reaction, gay guys love it.
That's what I was wondering. That's exactly what I'm looking for.
You know, queer networks love it.
Good.
They love it. I was watching the movie with my father and my mother the other day. And as we talk about the movie more, particularly, you watched this with your parents. We were watching this movie with my mom and dad, who hadn't seen it yet. And my mom just looked at me and she's like, this is a little, I'm like, yeah, yeah. So, you know, but I also think that putting it right off the bat shows you where this movie is going to be. And I think that if you can't handle that scene, you definitely can't handle the scenes that are about to come.
Okay. Just because I know you so well, it made me laugh. But I'm sure I know you. I've seen your stuff, so I was prepared. But I would say, even for you, I thought that was a little over the top.
You know, and a lot of the feedback from a lot of my people who follow my movies has been, Robert, this is the most sexual thing you have ever made.
No, it's not me.
Ever made. And I said, well, I think that's because, and they're like, and you've had like a three ways intense and like stuff, but like, this is the most sexual thing you've ever made. And I said, that's because I wanted a sexual horror comedy. And I think I succeeded at that.
Absolutely, you did. Purpose is the action to the action. You said something, one of your characters said something along that line.
What was that again?
Sorry, I wrote it down while I was watching it. Proposed action, like something that's not real action, I think one of your characters say early on. They make a comment about action. They don't like action that shouldn't happen. That they put it in
the... Yes. They don't like exposition. There's not too much exposition kills something. Yeah.
How do you, that's a personal opinion, or is that what you think the character should have said?
I don't know. I have a lot of exposition. You know, all my movies have way too much exposition in them, I feel. But personal opinion, kind of. But I do think that the characters really believe that. I think that's because I'm dealing with characters that are my other movie was set in the early 1000s. This is now. And the attention spans are so much shorter.
Which is upsetting. I gotta let things build. Your actor performing his stunt, I guess I can say that correctly. How much he just did it? Did you have to film it twice?
Which one? The falling down the stairs?
Yes, that's what I was getting to. You got it. Yes. Let's try it out.
Yeah, that's me.
It is you.
Yeah. So I play Moffat in the first scene.
Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't sure. I was like, I don't know. Okay. I also want to go back to the sexual experience.
And that's not where I broke my back. People, if you follow me, you know I broke my back falling down the stairs. It wasn't filming that. It was not filming that. Same stairs, but not that scene.
Okay. Costuming of the killer. Where did you buy this one?
Oh, I wanted something that was cheesy and anyone could buy. It was Amazon. But the mask, which is somewhere around here, that was made. And I specialized in Commedia dell'arte theater when I was in college. And so that's a nod to Italian Renaissance comedy.
Okay, you make a comment about J.K. Rowling. I presume that's a personal statement.
I love J.K. Rowling. I know a lot of queer people don't. I mean, I still love her personally. I love her writing. I'm not an offensive person. I don't get offended by people. Like, art is art, so I digest their art no matter what. Like, I'm still going to watch Santa Claus, even though Tim Allen supports Trump. So, like, it's not like that doesn't change my view on that. However, I thought it was very important to say because, one, a lot of people don't realize there is a trans character in our film. And I wanted to foreshadow that without calling out, this is a trans character. And I think that that was a good way of doing that.
Fair enough. I'll give you that. The Tennessee Williams book. Why that book?
I love Tennessee Williams. One of my favorite writers of all time. Orpheus Descends, one of his few lesser known plays. Great movie. A great film. Was an inspiration in everything I do.
Interesting. So what other influences do you have besides Tennessee Williams? I mean, I've seen a lot of your stuff, but I'm not saying Tennessee Williams is not a reference. I've never seen him in your work, so.
You know, and I think that's because most of my work focused on a young director, and this focuses on an older director, someone who has a little bit more experience. And I think Tennessee Williams is one of those things that you read in college and you kind of hate, but then you understand it later in life. Yeah. I think that's kind of the commentary there as well. Lillian Hellman has always been a huge influence on my life for sure. I just love the fact that a con artist could be so brilliant. And she was.
Wow, look at you. Okay, the DVD shelf as we roll on through. Mostly horror. We have a few non-horror titles on it. Mm-hmm. Knight's Tale. Logan's Run. A Gypsy CD. The Lovely, which I do understand why it's on there. And something called Playfair, and I put a question mark, and I didn't know what that was.
So, Playfair is an independent film. All of you, go watch it. I make a couple appearances in it, and it is about a kid discovering Renaissance Fair. It's made by a director named Teo. He did a great job with the film, and I also – my first ever sex scene in a film is in that. You will see my shadow having sex in a tent with my husband.
Excellent. Nothing wrong. Just Playfair caught me. I'm like, what is Playfair? And you know me well enough, though, I would have picked up on that in 2 seconds going, what?
No, and I like that. And I like that. But the cool thing is a lot of people – so Last Gasp doesn't have this, but Trilberry does. Last Gasp, we don't have as much background like
– nothing.
Look at this. This is symbolism. This film, there is symbolism everywhere. And you will know who the killer is within the first 5 seconds of the film if you're watching the walls and looking at the symbolism.
It's hard to take notes and watch these things. You know that, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Somebody else called me out on that. I said, I'm taking notes. It's hard for me to watch. I do watch your film. I pause, take notes, watch your film. Sometimes I miss things. I'm sorry, I do, because I'm taking notes. So did you plan on that stuff to be on the shelf? Did you pick it?
Yes, everything's curated. Everything in this movie is
very curated. So why is Playfair on that shelf? Just for people like me that would ask?
Playfair is on that shelf because in our world, in Trilberry, which a lot of people don't realize, all my films have a connection to Trilberry. That is the fictional world where all my films kind of take place. In that film, the next step in Last Gasp is a Ren Fair. Damien goes to Ren Fair. And so it is a reference to where that character, and Oscar is almost a reflection of where Damien could have went later in life.
Interesting. Fascinating. Okay, what room is the S room? S saucer room? Chair? Sorry, S saucer chair room? You make a comment, maybe a Saturn saucer, something saucer. It's an offhanded remark.
I have no idea. After
the Playfair saying, don't worry about it, we can move on. How is acting in your films and directing at the same time then?
Hard.
Because I know what you're like. I do because I talk to you all the time. But do the actors coming on board get the same energy I do from you? Or do they take some time to get that out of you?
No, they get it right off the bat. I'm like this all the time. Like literally all the time. And also I think that's one of the things when I cast actors – I do auditions, but I do an intensive interview process because I believe that finding people that you can work with personally in that space, especially like a film like this, is very important. So we had to get along. Our personalities also had to get along.
Interesting. So you've done your casting, you've done your interview. Have you ever had a period, not in this film, just in general, you said this is not working and have to replace somebody quickly?
Yes.
How does that feel?
I mean, it doesn't feel great for them.
No, I meant for you, because you got to get somebody immediately. You start shooting, you're busy.
I always have a backup. The thing that actors do not realize is there's always someone waiting in the wing. And I would rather hold production than film with the wrong actor. Because I've done that before. We filmed the entire first episode of Last Gasp almost with a different Damien.
Wow, I think you told me that. Okay, how was Gorilla shooting in the mall?
Gorilla shooting in the mall. We didn't shoot in a mall.
Oh, maybe it was the school that you made it look like a mall to me. That's what the only place I can think of.
Everywhere. So we didn't have to gorilla shoot anywhere. This movie had no gorilla shooting, thank God. But yeah, that was probably either a gaming location or the Merced Arts Center.
Okay, that's fine. These are just questions. Cloud and Pancake, whose idea?
Mine.
Brilliant. I loved it.
I love that monologue. That monologue is my favorite in the entire movie.
It was good.
Yeah. So funny story. That actor, I didn't find until 2 days before shooting.
I've heard that a few times.
And well, that's because I'm picky. And actually that character, we went through 7 different actors. So it's funny that you asked me that question, prior. We went through 7 different actors. It's one of those things that you had to find the right person. I needed someone who was like Malcolm in the Middle meets the guy from American Pie. And I found that wholesomeness in him, I think.
Okay. Something I know nothing about. So I have 2000 gay cinema. You do bring this up. Now, what is 2000 Gay Cinema? Like, I don't know. Is there a different, like, is Brokeback Mountain the starting of that, you mean? Or?
No, I would say, like, But I'm a Cheerleader.
Okay.
Like, 99.
That's 99.
Also, like, Elephant. Gus Van Sant Elephant would be considered queer cinema of the 2000. The Dreamers. With Michael Pitt. Also, I mean, there was a lot of reclaiming of John Waters stuff. You know, also like a movie that inspired me, Serial Mom. One of my favorite movies of all time. You know, so like I think that queer cinema found a different voice in away from what was going on in television at the time. Because at television, you had Queer as Folk and you had Will and Grace. But in queer cinema, you had more of that avant-garde darkness. I mean, even Donnie Darko has that queer element to it.
Absolutely. Interesting. So would you say your cinema should be added to that?
No.
No,
because that's so egotistical.
But like, I would add it.
Thank you. But like, I think that my best work is yet to be seen. I think that years from now, we'll be watching these films, laughing, enjoying them, and realizing how much of cult classics they will become. Cause Trilberry's already doing so well on Tubi. And I think it's because it does have that cult classic feel. But I really do think that what I have to do next will be added to that thing. And I also think that we're always learning. However, I do know that some of my film, like Last Gasp, is taught at some film schools now. So like I do know, you know, as queer cinema. So I do know that there are others who would say I'm in that class, but I personally do not put myself in that class.
Well, I would argue for independent filmmakers that I personally have on the show, you're one of the few that I know that's gay. I don't care, but you come out, you say I am. Great, fabulous, I'm happy for you. And that's the only way I can look at things. So I feel that you are a pioneer in the independent circuit for that. I would totally argue against you. You're one of the few names I know. If somebody asks one like this gentleman is, his films are great. Go see them. Not because you're gay, because you're a good filmmaker. You know, that's what I mean. But I mean, I don't like bunching people into, like you saying, 2000 Gay Cinema. I just watch film for film.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, but I also, so the cool thing with the reference to that line, and a lot of people call out that line. Actually, it's funny that people notice that line the most, is what it does is it makes people go back and think, what was 2000 Gay Cinema? And then they start to watch those films and they realize, wait, Bring It On it was queer cinema? Like, oh, yes, God. Bring It On is queer cinema. Like, But I'm a Cheerleader, queer cinema. Like, they're, you know, gosh, heck, Flipper. Flipper was like a queer cinema child movie. Like, there's so much in without realizing what was queer cinema. But now that we have an understanding of what queer cinema is, I think it's important to go back and look at it.
I 100% agree with you. Yeah, let's go back to the my favorite place is that garage. I could spend a lot of time in here, but I'll be here. Cabaret is sitting right in the table. I'm getting used to now.
Cabaret. There's two references to Cabaret. I don't know if you caught them.
I know I caught one, the book, obviously. I don't know. Mm-hmm. Did you make a comment about Cabaret earlier on in the film?
There's a poster of Cabaret on the wall.
Did I not make posters?
And the poster in Cabaret on the wall is a reference to the actual production of Cabaret that I was in.
Well, I do have Ragtime written down too.
Yep. Also, that's a production of Ragtime that I was in. But Ragtime, yeah, I played Henry Ford and J.P. Morgan, which are great, great roles in that musical. But Ragtime makes references in Last Gasp too. I make references to Ragtime in both series.
I do want to ask, there's four copies of Monopoly.
Mm-hmm. I love Monopoly.
Okay.
But I also, Oscar monopolizes people's time.
Oh, he does.
He, you know, and I think that is another one of those subtle references to, are we in a game and what game are we playing and who really is the orchestrator of the game. And I mean, and I think that in a lot of ways, you kind of could be guessing at any of those people in that room.
But lastly, I do want to just talk about, so I get a little bit more characters and stuff. Is Blade is an underrated trilogy ? I put. The first two films I love. That third one I have a lot of issues with.
I love Blade. It's referenced in Last Gasp as well. Blade Trilogy, the third one to me, is a perfect example of what a bad B movie can look like with a multi-billion dollar budget. And what a failure to franchise is. And so like that to me is what is so important about that movie, is it also shows the lack of faith and comfort American cinema had in actually giving a black man a great trilogy. What? And I know people are going to go, but it's the truth. Because even when Wakanda came out, people were saying, oh, it's the first black superhero. It's not the first black superhero. Blade was the first black superhero movie in my generation.
Okay.
I mean, it really was. Yo, Shaft. Oh yeah, Shaft, first superhero in the universe. And he had three movies. But like in that idea of major picture, we're going to make a universe. Yeah, Blade was the guy. And that's why this whole movement to make a final Blade movie, you know, so that we can cap it out and make it great, I am all for. Go support the GoFundMe for that.
Okay. We're almost out of time, so I will ask your fun questions now.
Okay.
Unless I missed something about your film you wanted to go into, but I think we had fun.
No, I think that people will enjoy it. I think it's a great film. Just go see it. Like, watch it.
Exactly. Guys, I could go into depth of it, but I hate ruining his films because I love them so much. So I gave you the highlights I wanted to discuss. People, go see it. Since you moved to Las Vegas, and I had no idea. So what's your favorite part of Las Vegas?
My house. I haven't really seen much of Las Vegas. I've been working and editing so much. I would say that my favorite part of Las Vegas is the fact that I can drive to Arizona really quick.
Cool. I didn't say something Canadians don't know. I know Arizona's south. That's about all I know.
Yeah. I love Arizona.
One thing you've learned about Las Vegas you didn't know when you moved there.
I didn't know that we are the nation's capital of content creators.
Wow. I did not know that either.
Yeah.
And last thing, one place you love to visit now in Las Vegas.
Oh, one place I love to visit, the dispensaries, all of them. There are hundreds of them. Planet 13 is one of my favorite.
Well, everybody can find his stuff on Tubi. It's all re-edited. Please watch it. Thank you for your time.